Okay, thank you, Lucas. So here you know that you're in Canada when you get such a pointer. It's pretty cool. Okay, so first of all, thank you. Oh, yeah, we have to maybe close the door. Thank you for the invitation to Perimeter Institute. It's a really inspiring place to be, I think. And so what I'm going to talk about today is an entirely theoretical research effort that we have been starting 2 years ago, and that several groups have been joining in since then. So I'm going to talk about fractional churn insulators, and that is work that was done together with Christopher Mudry, my supervisor at Paul Scherrer Institute, then Claudio Chamon, Shinsei Ryu, Luis Santos, who is sitting here, and lately also Adolfo Grushin joined this project. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about before I'm taking you to the fractional churn insulators is the integer version thereof. So I'm going to give a brief introduction to churn insulators, and then I'm going to introduce the numerical results with exact diagonalization that we obtained for fractional churn insulators. And finally, I want to mention what is the ways we think we can observe these states in reality, and that has to do with C2 topological insulators. So let me start with a smooth introduction to Landau level physics. Probably I don't have to be too spend too much time on that for this audience, but anyway, let me remind you that when we confine electrons in a two-dimensional plane, and we put a huge magnetic field perpendicular to the plane, the spectrum of the electrons, which was a, say, parabolic spectrum to begin with, reorganizes dramatically, and it reorganizes into a set of equally spaced bands that we call Landau levels, and the spacing is basically introducing an energy scale in the problem, which is basically given by the magnetic field. There is also a length scale appearing, the square of which is the area penetrated by one flux quantum. And each of those flat single particle bands has a huge degeneracy, and this degeneracy is given by the area of the droplet divided by the area of one flux quantum. Okay, so we have basically flat bands, but that is not the spectacular thing. The spectacular finding was experimentally to observe that when the chemical potential is put in between those flat bands, then we measure that there is no longitudinal transport, but transverse conductivity, and this transverse conductivity is quantized in units of E squared over H. That's the integer quantum Hall effect. And even more surprisingly, giving rise to a second Nobel Prize in that field, is the fractional quantum Hall effect that appears when the chemical potential is tuned into one of those Landau levels so that it is fractionally filled with particles, and these electrons then interact and repel each other with Coulomb interaction, and this brings about incompressible insulating states at certain magic filling fractions with an associated Hall conductivity, which is also fractional and given by E squared over H times some nu. Okay, so this is a very interesting effect conceptually in condensed matter physics, and first of all, it's a topologically ordered state. It shows that we can have quasi-particle excitations in states which have not the same quantum numbers and properties as the free particles, the electrons that make out the state of, have. And so, this has created a lot of research interest, of course. Now, one question that we might want to pose is something about this interesting state really special to the situation of having a magnetic field and electrons in two dimensions, or is this not the unique setting for such an effect to appear, such an interesting many-body effect? And can we, for example, dispose of the large magnetic field? And this question is also relevant with a few experiments, because the fractional quantum Hall effect, has been observed already, well, almost 30 years ago, but actually it is hard to come in experiment to the conditions for observing it because you need extremely low temperatures, a very huge magnetic field, and clean samples and so on. So the answer to this question has been given by Duncan Haldane for the integer quantum Hall effect in 1988. And I want to introduce first what this answer is, but before doing so, I would just want to show you the citation records of this paper. So you see for almost 20 years, nobody cared about this this work really, or nobody cited it at least. And then people realized that this is the building block for another non-interacting state of matter, which is the C2 topological insulator. And that, you know, brought about a tremendous increase in the citations, and then came also the fractional churn insulators, for which it is also sort of the basis. So this is to motivate you if you don't find your work cited that much. Okay, so what is Haldane's model about? How does he realize an integer quantum Hall effect without magnetic field? Well, basically he is building a lattice model, so he's considering spinless fermions that hop on a honeycomb lattice. Now, everybody knows by now that if you do that and you just use nearest neighbor hopping, given by those black lines here, then you get a Dirac spectrum, like in graphene. And what he added to this is the next nearest neighbor hopping, given by the dashed lines, but this is not a trivial next nearest neighbor hopping. It gives the electrons a phase twist when they hop along those lines. And this next nearest neighbor hopping opens energy gap into spectrum. And now you have an insulator if you put the chemical potential in the gap. And it turns out that this is not a trivial insulator, but it is an insulator with a non-trivial electromagnetic response. It's called churn insulator. Its Hall conductivity is exactly that of the lowest Landau level, namely E squared over H. And the integer C is called the churn number. That's where the name comes from. It's a winding, now it's a topological invariant of the band structure. So in a sense, what I didn't say yet is that, of course, you can interpret this hopping as a flux pattern that the electrons see, but the crucial thing is that the flux that is penetrating one unit cell is actually, in a sense, it is zero, but of course, it's a lattice gauge theory, so you don't, there is no well-defined net magnetic field. But you can think of it as a staggered flux problem. But another way to think about it is that we have a Landau level with the magnetic length going to the, or basically being replaced by the length scale of the lattice. So, so the question is this model now just like a Landau level? Do we expect all the same physical consequences as we expect from a Landau level? And the point that I want to make is that this is not at all so. So first of all, you directly see that, I mean, for example, the energy dispersion of a Landau level, it was flat. Here, generically, it would not be flat. But there are more subtle characterizations of this band structure and the states in this band structure. There is a geometric characterization given by the quantum metric and a topological characterization that's basically related to the churn number. And in that the Berry curvature enters. I will define those quantities shortly. And all these three quantities are constant in a Landau level, but not in a generic churn insulator. So as for the churn number, this we can use the single particle states to define a Berry connection. And once we have this Berry connection, we can take its curl to obtain a field strength, a gauge invariant quantity. And this Berry curvature integrating that gives the churn number. So the churn number is quantized and quantized to integer values. And it can be not only plus or minus one in these band structures, but it also can be higher than one, which is not the case in the Landau level, for example. And to explain the connection to the quantum metric, which will play a role later, let me just show the following formula. So to see how these electrons basically behave in such a churn band, we may look at the position operator of the electrons and project this to the degrees of freedom of that band. And if we do so and we take the product of the mu and nu components, or of x and y, say, of this position operator projected to the churn band, and we take the matrix elements, we'll find that this is in generic, I mean, this is a matrix, right? Mu and nu can take values 1 and 2. That matrix will have a real symmetric part and an imaginary antisymmetric part, being Hermitian. And the real symmetric part we call the quantum metric, and the imaginary antisymmetric part is basically this Berry curvature. So in other words, if we take these x and y position operators projected to that band and take its matrix elements, these do not commute as they would for free particles, but they are actually their matrix elements are given by the Berry field strength, and so in a way these electrons are experiencing a non-commutative geometry. Of course, this is more pristine in the lambda level, as I said, where f of k is actually just a constant and x and y coordinates are like a canonical conjugate particles. It's a constant. It can only be Lb squared, I think. It's the only, I don't know, maybe with some prefix.
No lambda level index. For every lambda level.
No, it's the same, yeah. It's independent of the lambda level, yeah.
Sorry. What is chi actually?
Chi, maybe I was a bit inconsistent in notation. It's just be the single particle states in the block
same,
plane.
Same as U of K.
Actually, it's the same as U of K, I'm sorry.
So what
would
the commutator always be K?
That's basically this.
Just this. Just that.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. And that, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me relate to a very famous result for the lambda level and show that it breaks down in some sense in the Chern insulators because of the non-constant Berry curvature and metric. So Gerwin, MacDonald, and Platzmann argued by looking at the density operators as to why fractional quantum Hall states should be gapped ground states of the quantum Hall fluid. And they did so by looking at the Fourier components of the density operator, which is basically the exponentiated position operator. And it turns out that due to the fact that x and y coordinates are conjugate to each other, the Fourier components of the density operator satisfy this very beautiful GMP algebra, so they give a closed algebra where another density operator appears on the right-hand side. Now, how does that look in the Chern insulator? Just to contrast and give an idea. First of all, if both F and G are constant as a function of momentum, Raoul Roy recently found that basically the same algebra applies. If we relax the condition on the quantum metric and just take F to be constant, we find that in a long wavelength approximation, a similar structure appears, and we have still this position operator. But if we finally go to the actual situation that we have in a generic model where neither F nor G is constant, and actually they are varying quite a lot, then we see that we cannot make up another position operator on the right-hand side. So there is some non-commutativity of those density operators. Sorry, a density operator on the right-hand side. So there is some non-commutativity of the density operators, but it's not as pristine, not as beautiful as in the lambda level. Okay, so this is the situation in the fractional Chern insulators that we start off. And this is the basis where we wanted to ask the question, and now I'm coming to fractional Chern insulators, of whether we can realize actually not only the integer quantum Hall effect, but also the fractional quantum Hall effect without an external magnetic field in such a lattice model situation. So can we dispose of this large magnetic field to realize fractional quantum Hall physics? And the answer that we found is yes. And I'm going to explain now why and how that comes about. So it turns out that not every Chern insulator that we can take exhibits fractional quantum Hall-like states. But we have a certain wish list that we have to fulfill, and here is my wish list. So we take a Chern insulator, and that has an energy scale delta, which is given by the gap separating the two bands. Secondly, we want the bands of that Chern insulator to be reasonably flat. And at the same time, it should, of course, have a Chern number which is different from zero, otherwise the whole story doesn't go through. To make that, we might have to introduce some longer range hoppings, but in principle, it is a question of, you know, for a theoretical physicist, it's just a question of fine tuning models. And so we have another energy scale, which is the bandwidth of the churn band. And finally, we see it's a strongly correlated interacting problem. So we'll have some interaction energy scale of some short range repulsive interaction. And so what we want is that the following hierarchy of energy scales applies. So we have a huge gap, then comes the interaction energy scale, and finally the bandwidth. And this was basically realized by several papers at the same time. Also, Evelyn was part in this work here with Xiaogang together. And now we, okay, so what basically all of these papers realized is that it is possible to achieve this energy scale in certain models. And now we have to solve a strongly correlated many-body problem. So what we did is numerical exact diagonalization because it's unbiased, right? Sorry?
So I'm curious about one thing. You first argue about the band, the structure of the band. And finally, you say you want an interaction. And then the interaction strength is much larger than the bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So the band structure, once you put the interaction, the band structure may become meaningless.
Yes.
Especially, mm-hmm. especially if the energy is larger.
Yes, I understand that. Mm-hmm.
So in which, what is it that you work hard to get 0.1 and 2, and then you put 0.3, which may destroy
it? Uh-huh. So you, well, it may destroy, but okay.
The thing is that the band gap is pretty much larger.
Yes, that is to ensure us that the electrons are still in this non-trivial topological state. It enforces a projection in the Hilbert space, in effect.
But the bandwidth, work hard towards having a flat band, mm-hmm. then you put the interaction, this may destroy the flatness.
Yes, okay.
Is that a concern? Or?
I think I'll come back to exactly this point later. And of course, it is a concern. And we also see that it exactly leads to the breakdown of some fractional quantum Hall states, especially at large fillings of the bands. So it's exactly what you're saying. You effectively, I'll show it later, you'll effectively introduce a band dispersion with the interaction.
Is the idea that, except for those cases, we still think of the system, the band structure is still the one you try to
Yeah.
even after you put the interaction?
Yes, that's the idea. Now, of course, this is a first attempt. Now, we might go take these results and go from there and, you know, find a fractional churn insulator in very different regimes, but this is where we found it, right? And of course, it's a challenge to see where is how far can we go in weakening those constraints. Okay, so before I actually show you the numerical results, let me introduce a model that we have been thinking about, and that allows us to, I mean, there are many models that have been studied to show fractional churn insulators, but this one has the advantage that we can tune basically from churn number equal to 0, 1, or 2 without changing anything other than parameters in the model. So this model is on the square lattice, and we think of electrons with a local on-site degree of freedom, like a spin 1/2 at every lattice site. And whenever they hop with nearest neighbor hopping or across the diagonals, the spin of those electrons flip as written here. So there is an energy scale T, and then we have parameters H1, 2, and H3 for these three hopping directions. And if we switch off H1, 2, and 3, and only have T, then the band structure of this model has 4 Dirac cones, and it turns out that by putting H1, H2, and H3, we can tune the mass at these Dirac cones, so that the H's introduce masses, and we can tune the sign of the mass and the size of the mass by changing these H's at those 4 points. And if I was to compute the churn number for this model, this property turns out to be very useful, because the churn number is given by nothing but the sum of the signs of those mass terms, plus some factor that depends on the chirality or helicity of the single particle momenta. And so you basically, by changing the mass signs, you can basically make the churn number 0, 1, or 2. And so we have now implemented this model, and
since you have spin flip involved, you have in mind some kind of spin orbit coupling.
Yes. So this is a question of interpretation of what the local degree of freedom means. Yeah, I think one can see it like this, but it is breaking time reversal symmetry.
Oh, I see.
There is a imaginary part here actually in the nearest neighbor hopping. So you can think of some part of this coming from spin orbit, but you also need to explicitly break time reversal.
So how do we think about this? This is not fermionic model.
This is fermionic.
It's fermionic.
Actually, I'm only talking about fermionic models here to keep it simple. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's look at this model and look what we get numerically. So we put this on a small system of, say, 4 by 6 lattice sites, and we apply periodic boundary conditions, so effectively we have a torus. And then here I choose the model with the Chern number equal to 1 and look at 1/3 filling of this model. So all the ground states, due to the translational invariance of the Hamiltonian, have a center of mass momentum as a good quantum number. And now I can basically plot the energy spectrum as a function of this center of mass momentum. And this is what I get in the lower part of the spectrum. And you see that there are 3 almost degenerate states down here, separated by some sort of energy gap, if you want. And they fall at these 3 center of mass momentum positions. Now, what we can do to gain confidence that these are really 3 ground states in the thermodynamic limit is, we can apply twisted boundary conditions, or in other words, we can insert a flux into the torus on which our electrons live. So when they go once around, they'll pick up a phase that basically is this flux modulo 2 pi. And now we can change this flux from 0 to 2 pi. Okay, this is actually divided by 2 pi here. And what we see is that those 3 ground states evolve completely independently from the rest of the spectrum. So this gives us some confidence that these are really the ground states of the model also in the thermodynamic limit. Okay, so that was at 1/3 filling at Chern number equal to 1. Let me also give you the information about the Chern number equal to 2 at 1/5 filling. If we do the diagonalization here and I show you 3 different lattice sites, we also get a ground state manifold, this time with 5 quasi-degenerate ground states, and they sit on different positions in this momentum Brillouin zone. And also here, if we do the flux insertion, these ground states evolve completely independently from the excited states. So, okay, this is just observation. Now the question is do they have anything to do with topologically ordered states? Are they like fractional quantum Hall states? And I'm just I want to give you now a list of arguments as to why this is really convincing fractional quantum Hall physics going on. So first of all, that was worked out by Xiaogang Wen quite a while ago. If you have a topologically ordered state on a manifold of genus G, I mean basically a quantum Hall state, and the filling for the Laplacian states is 1/ν. Then, it's new, then 1/ν to the power of the genus is the degeneracy that you would expect, the topological degeneracy. And that works out nicely with the 2 examples that I gave. So this would be 1/5 5 for the 1/5 filling and 3 for the 1/3 filling. The second thing is that we would expect those states to be featureless. So we have to see whether they might break spontaneously in the thermodynamic limit some symmetry of the model, like a charge density wave pattern or so. And the question is, how do we map out the density, whether the ground states would tend to do this or not in the thermodynamic limit? So let me just make an aside on how we do that. You have this ground state manifold, psi I, where I runs from 1 to 3 or 1 to 5 for the cases that I discussed. And what we can do is we can take the expectation value of the density operator at position r in the lattice and take the expectation or the matrix elements in those ground states. So we assemble an n by n matrix, 3 by 3 or 5 by 5 matrix, which we can diagonalize at every point in r And it turns out that translational symmetry guarantees that the eigenvalues of this matrix are independent of position, but not are the eigenvectors. So we can fix the eigenvector at one position R0 and sandwich the matrix with this eigenvector, but let the R run over the lattice side. And that way we can map out some sort of density map of this ground state manifold that it could basically in the thermodynamic limit achieve. And what we see is that I didn't plot the 5x5 case, but it would just be brown. You wouldn't see any structure. And as we change the aspect ratio of the system, we see some charge density wave pattern emerging. But in the aspect ratio 1 case, it's really just a homogeneous featureless liquid. And this charge density wave pattern is actually also what we would expect from a fractional quantum Hall state, because this is basically approaching the tauless limit of a thin torus fractional quantum Hall state. Okay, now the next thing is, of course, what we would measure in a fractional quantum Hall state is the Hall conductivity. So we might as well compute that thing to gain to see whether or not we match the expected result. And this is basically computing the many-body churn number in this setting. And again, how do we do that numerically? Well, what I told you before is that we can insert this flux into the cylinder, and then this flux can take values of between 0 and 2 pi. So basically, what we can do is we can compute the ground state as a function of this flux that we insert, and therefore we get this ground state defined on a torus, on a flux torus. And what Thouless told us, that then we can basically compute the churn number of the ground state on the flux torus, and this gives the Hall conductivity. But here actually we found a simplification if the state does not break spontaneously any symmetry, and it only occupies single particle states in that lower band. So if this is satisfied, then we can just compute the many-body Hall conductivity by multiplying the occupation number in momentum space with the field strength, the Berry field strength of the single particle model. So this is very easy to calculate because this can be readily evaluated once you have the ground state at zero flux. Okay, and if we do so, what we find is 1/3 and 2/5 for the two cases that I showed you before. The 2 and the 2/5 comes, of course, from the churn number equal to 2 of the non-interacting band structure. Okay, so so much for this. And then there came a long list of other compelling evidences that... Mm-hmm.
2/5
Yes, exactly. But it's 1/5, but at churn number 2.
But you broke the Galilean symmetry, so you cannot set other many-body churn numbers, right?
Sorry?
Because you break the Galilean symmetry, so you cannot set different Hall conductivities.
For the different ground states, you mean?
No. You cannot set the different Hall conductivities from the given filling because you break the Galilean symmetry.
I don't understand.
I think it's a confidentiality and the filling fraction.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be related.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the symmetry breaking you mentioned is about some
translations? Yes, it's, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But this is, I mean, that I as I showed you, it's, where is it? Oops. This just happens if I go to a very strange aspect ratio. So for 5x5 or 5x6, there is no spontaneous breaking of the translational symmetry. That's true. And yeah. But of course, this is also what this formula tells you. If you have a variation, if you have no variation of the Berry curvature, right? If it was constant, like in a lambda level, you're basically, if you have no spontaneous symmetry breaking, you will not get a Hall conductivity that's different from the filling fraction. But if f of k varies, you have room to play in principle to get the whole conductivity that might be different than the filling fraction. Okay. Sorry.
So in practice, you want to compute the Chern.
That one.
Oh, yeah, this one. So for the Chern number, do you actually generalize the system for different values of the flexes, I mean, for different values of the boundary conditions?
To compute this, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with the phase? You have a global phase for the ground state.
So what you do is you take a small loop and you compute the imaginary part basically of the overlap. You take the overlaps around the loop. There is a bit of chalk. Oh, cool. So you take, you know, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you take the overlaps like this. Okay. That's for, so in the flux Brillouin zone, say. So this is flux phi x and phi y.
Oh, I see. And then there is no other.
And then and if I take the imaginary part of this, this is gauge invariant. I can, and then I make a small squares like this and sum that up and have a gauge invariant object. But with this formula, you don't even need to do it. But of course, you have to trust the formula. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so now let me just mention that there are evidences that directly monitor the topological order in the state, and that is the level counting analysis of the entanglement spectrum that was put forward by Andre Bernevik and his group. And then also there has been a mapping of the lambda level Laughlin state to the states in the fractional Chern insulator proposed and also numerically tested. So all of what I told you is and what has been found so far is completely compatible with the abelian, the abelian states that we see is compatible with the hierarchical Chern Simons description of the fractional quantum Hall effect. And as for the non-abelian states, there are also some of them realized in numerical calculations in Chern number one bands with the 3 and the 4 body interaction. You can realize more read and read resize states. And there has been also recently, basically things have been put together so that a series of states emerges for Chern numbers higher than 1, where the denominator is basically in the fermionic case given by 1 plus 2c, and then you can put in any integer on top, and whenever k is bigger than 1, there's a non-abelian phase. Okay, so so much for the evidence that we have a fractional quantum Hall state. Now I want to explore what are the limits of this procedure. So is it always the best if we go as close to the lambda level paradigm of flat energy, flat curvature, flat flat metric and flat Berry curvature, or might it actually be beneficial not to have an exactly flat band and so on? So here is a very naive approach to this. What we did here is we changed in the model, we changed the single particle bandwidth, okay? And on the other side, I give the dependence on one of the parameters in the model, but I always stay in a phase with, I think, Chern number equal to 2 1/5 spinning. And what I plot here is the gap above the 3 degenerate, quasi-degenerate ground states. And so the color code is basically, here is the gap, and here we have the gap divided by the spreading of the 3 quasi-degenerate ground states. So this should be a measure for the correlation length of the system. And we see that it's not always such that at zero bandwidth, really most favorable situation for the fractional Chern insulator is, but actually it's most of the time at finite bandwidth. So having zero bandwidth does not necessarily give the most stable state, but some dispersion can help to stabilize the state. Let me back that up with an analytical argument. So in general, the interaction that we are looking at is given by, you know, I mean, this is a very general form of a two-particle interaction. And since we project to the lower band our interaction, or effectively impose this projection by the energy scale hierarchy, we have the single particle overlaps appearing here in the interaction. And now what I want to argue is exactly your question from before. Does this interaction produce some effective curvature of the band or bandwidth? And what we'll see it does actually, and it has to do with the quantum distance, which basically is again related to the quantum metric here. So how does that work? Let me do a particle hole transformation in the band. Particle hole transformation basically replaces chi dagger by chi and k by minus k if you want. And as a result, if I want to bring the interaction to the same form as above, so if I go, for example, from 1/5 filling to 4/5 filling, then I have to normal order again, of course. And this normal ordering will bring about a single particle term here. And this single particle term comes with an effective dispersion, which is given by, for one, the interaction, and secondly, this quantum distance. Oh, actually, there's just this is one, kappa is one, sorry. And now the interesting part is this is summed over k prime. This is a function of k minus k prime. This is a function of k minus k prime. So the question is this quantum distance of the single particle states that I define here, is that also a function of k minus k prime? And it is exactly so if g is a constant in the lambda level, in the turn band. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, I missed the point. So what's this distance measuring?
Well, it's basically measuring the overlap of two states in the single particle it's a quantum distance measure.
So, but these two states correspond to different momenta?
Yes, single particle states at different momenta.
And they're not, the overlap is not zero?
Well, I mean, it's, no, it's just the, it's the translation invariant part of the Bloch states. So it's generically not zero. It's just, I mean, you have a spinner, right? If you have a Bloch Hamiltonian, you have some, if it's a 2x2 matrix, like in the Haldane model, you have a spinner with two complex numbers that, you know, is the eigenstate of the matrix. And you just take those spinners and take the overlap,
so
I mean, dot them into each other.
K is not labeling non-functional modalities at all?
No. Yeah. No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's somewhat like in the standard lambda problem, you have these coherent states,
mm-hmm.
which have a overlap.
Oh, okay.
They're
yes. Well, yes, you can think of this as an overcomplete set of two vectors. Yeah, if you want, but it's very much overcomplete.
So you measure this distance, and then what do you make?
Oh, no, I mean, the point is that this distance, if g of k is a constant, as in the lambda level, this distance is a function of k minus k prime. So it's translational invariant. And, I mean, in the Brillouin zone. And then this epsilon of k, since you sum over k prime here, becomes flat. So in the lambda level, we have a perfect particle hole symmetry. Because when we go from 1/5 filling to 4/5 filling, say, or 1/3 to 2/3, we would just add a flat dispersion, which is just a number. But in the Chern insulator, what we do is, due to the fact that this this distance is, or the metric is not constant in the Brillouin zone, we introduce an effective dispersion for the holes. So we do not expect the same state at 1/5 as at 4/5. And in fact, this is also what is seen in the numerics. 4/5, usually, for many models where you get the 1/5 states, you don't get 4/5 state.
So your epsilon k, what you have written is like two-body generated band dispersion.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Since your original bands were not completely flat, there will be also the standard kinetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do calculations, do you add it or do you?
Well, we can or cannot edit. I mean, it's we did both basically, and I mean, if it's too big, the state breaks down, right? Yeah, but we can also completely kill it artificially, basically, to see really the pure effect of. Okay, so with this, I would want to close the fractional turn insulator discussion and come to the spontaneous formation of fractional turn insulators that might be possible in C2 topological insulators. And for that, first, a small reminder of how to think, or, I mean, why I'm coming up with this problem, or how we basically started to think about it. So if the main ingredient, or one of the main ingredients here is a topological single particle band structure, which is the Chern insulator. And now we can ask, are there other topologically interesting single particle band structures? And it turns out that there is in 2 plus 1D another one, which is the C2 topological insulator. Okay, and so in a Gedanken experiment approach, you can think of it as having two integer quantum Hall layers, one for spin-up particles, the other for spin-down particles, and they basically experience a spin-selective magnetic field with opposite orientation. And that whole object is time-reversal symmetric because, well, time-reversal symmetry would just map one layer to the other, including the flip of the magnetic field. Okay, so this is the simplest picture that you can have of a C2 topological insulator. It's even if it conserves the SC component of spin, it is even a quantum spin Hall insulator where you have quantized spin Hall conductivity, but the Hall conductivity of the two layers cancel each other, so there's no Hall conductivity. And the physical realization of this has, of course, been found following work by Charlie Kane and Millie, and then an experiment it was in the Molenkamp group in mercury telluride. Okay, so much for the integer quantum Hall effect and the C2 topological insulator. Now the question is there a fractional counterpart to this? So is there something like a fractional topological insulator? And the Gedanken experiment would be completely parallel. You take a plane with a fractional quantum Hall effect at filling, say, 1 over n for upspin electrons. And you take another plane with a filling 1 over n for downspin electrons. And they experience a different magnetic field. So this idea was put forward by Michael Levin and Eddie Stern. But it was studied on this Gedanken level. And so our question was, is there a physical a setting for this to appear, say in a lattice model as we have been studying before? And the answer to this question is, well, I can't really say that it is physical. It depends on what you mean by that. But we have found something else interesting, and that's what I'm going to tell you now. Okay, first of all, the wish list is the same as we had before for the fractional Chern insulator, except that we now want a quantum spin Hall insulator to start with, and so not Haldane model, but some time reversal symmetric variant of this. And then we want again a band, which is reasonably flat, but has this topological attribute, and we add the short range repulsive interactions. Okay, now just to be a bit more specific on the model. So here I am just writing schematically a single particle model, which gives you this. I mean, we have a Chern insulator for downspins and time reversal invariant part for the upspins. And then we are considering the following interaction. So first of all, we have now a Hubbard interaction for on-site densities, spin up times spin down. And then we have a nearest neighbor interaction, which we also had before in the fractional Chern insulator, once for spin down with spin down, once for spin up with spin up. And then also for spin up in general with spin down, right? They would also see each other when on nearest neighbor sites. And I'm introducing here a parameter lambda for if lambda is equal to 0, the two layers would be completely decoupled for that part of the interaction. And if lambda is equal to 1, we would have an SU2 symmetric interaction, which we would think of being a physical limit. Okay, so, and the upshot is if we put this, on a computer, or even without doing that, we would figure out rather soon that there is something that preempts the formation of the fractional topological insulator, and that is donor magnetism. So since we have a flat band with a huge density of states, and we put some repulsive interaction, we would immediately create a ferromagnet. But it's an interesting ferromagnet because it is actually, and that is what I hope is the upshot here, it is a fractional churn insulator. And the way to see it is basically, or one piece of insight may come from this formula where the Hall conductivity of the topological insulator is written as the density in momentum space of the upspin particles times the Berry curvature that they see, plus the density of downspin particles times their Berry curvature. Now, time reversal symmetry makes these two opposite and equal in, I mean, come with the opposite sign, equal magnitude. So basically the sigma Hall is zero, but it's an interesting zero because it's, for example, at one-third filling, it would be something like one-third plus minus one-third. Now the magnetism, of course, changes the occupation numbers. So it lets the downspin electrons to be unoccupied and brings their electrons and flips the spin. So we have a two-third occupation of the upspin electrons. So we would expect the Hall conductivity of two-third for the, if we get a fractional churn insulator. And this is also what we see. So here is the phase diagram that we can map out as a function of the on-site Hubbard interaction and this parameter lambda that tunes from decoupled layers to the physical SU2 symmetric limit. And what we find is that in the corner of the phase diagram where those layers are decoupled, we basically have trivially two fractional churn insulators. So trivially, we have a product state that is time reversal symmetric, and this is the fractional topological insulator that we are searching. The ground state degeneracy is ninefold in this case because we have three ground states of each churn insulator, and 3 times 3 is 9. And however, in the physical limit, if you want, where we also switch on the on-site repulsion and make the spin interaction, the nearest neighbor interaction spin isotropic, we have a threefold degenerate ground state at full magnetization. And so we break spontaneously time reversal symmetry, and this turns out to be a fractional churn insulator spontaneously formed.
But aided by magnetism.
That would be magnetic by its on its own, but we don't need to put a magnetic field to create it,
so
in
that's
principle.
Also spontaneous.
It's spontaneous. Yeah, the two things are really coming together. Yeah. But of course, we might wonder whether with a bit of magnetic field, we can actually, you know, in a real material favor this state against other sources. But okay, that's details.
And what is this red island?
That's a good question. Wait, here. This is another threefold degenerate state. And we think that there is some sort of pairing going on because it's basically for low on-site interaction, but nearest neighbor interaction. So it seems that the particles are pairing in real space. So they're really sitting on top of each other and moving together. But that's the speculation. We didn't actually in detail analyze this state. We didn't see, I mean, it's in the spin equal to zero sector. So here, I mean, spin is a good quantum number. So we can look what is spin, total spin or total magnetization of those states. Here, this is full magnetization, and this ground state is in the spin equal to zero sector. So we don't, it doesn't look like time reversal symmetry is broken on that level, but we don't know.
But the pairing, it's repulsive.
The interactions are all repulsive, yes. Yeah, but it's, you know, it can be effectively attractive on site sort of by then, yeah.
How many electrons are there in your study?
This is a 3x4 lattice with spin. So it's at two-third filling, it's 12 electrons, right? Yeah. No, three, that's 12. No, wait. It's 2 times 4, it's 8. 8 electrons, okay. I think. Yeah. So, okay. Now let me come to, before concluding my talk, basically let me just show that there are some developments in first principle calculations and ideas on how to come to this limit that we want, namely a C2 topological insulator with an almost flat non-trivial band. So one proposal is in this Nature Communications paper where they analyze transition metal oxide heterostructures and basically stack atomically thin layers in a specific way so that flat band emerges in one of the limits. But okay. The other thing is recently popped up is an organometallic framework of molecules in two dimensions. And this creates also a band structure for which, well, bandwidth and the band gap are at least of comparable magnitude, I would say. And this is a first principle calculation on that. And I hope that, you know, more of these kind of results would pop up, and eventually we would get to the limit that we want at one point. But this is, of course, an open experimental question. And maybe let me, before putting my conclusions, let me give you a slide on a motivation that I could actually have used at the beginning of the talk. Why do we actually care about the fractional churn insulators if we have the fractional quantum Hall effect? Well, first of all, as I have shown you in the beginning, the fractional churn insulators have much less symmetry than lambda levels. So I think this ties in nicely with what Duncan Haldane also works on recently, namely that by studying something like Laughlin wave functions, which are very symmetric objects, we are maybe overestimating the role of symmetry for the appearance of those strongly correlated states. So the fractional churn insulators, as being completely, I mean, as having very little symmetry, might tell us better on what is actually at the heart of the fractional quantum Hall effect. And from a more practical point of view, if we were able to put this thing into reality, of course, the energy scales that we would expect to appear in those lattice models would be quite large. So we would expect to have a high temperature effect for the incompressibility gaps and so on. And even more practical, if we do that at half filling, so if we have the spontaneous magnetization of the flat topological band, we get spontaneously anomalous quantum Hall effect or integer quantum Hall response. And this can, you know, even be interesting for very practical applications such as conductance, I mean, current transport, because let me express you here with an exponential, the whole, the residual longitudinal conductivity of such a state would be given by, I mean, it's not zero like in a superconductor, but at finite temperature, it would be given by the exponential, where the gap size basically determines the dissipation, because it's the you know, excitations that you create. And so if we have, if we were to have a gap of 0.2 electron volts, we would be comparable to a single layer of copper in such an integer quantum Hall system. And if you know, delta would be only 0.3, only a little bit larger, we would already be three magnitudes better in conductivity than that. Okay, so let me conclude by just summarizing that for the fractional churn insulators in these churn bands, we have seen that they appear quite generically. People have studied many models. There is a slew of states also. Some of them can be found in fractional quantum Hall states as an analog, but some of them at higher churn numbers are even departing from the fractional quantum Hall paradigm. And secondly, we have proposed a way to realize those states, or we are, you know, on the way of thinking of how to realize those states in nature. And one way would be to look at C2 topological insulators, but to analyze concrete models, we have to, of course, think about more powerful characterizations of the band structure that nature might give us. And lastly, which is a bit of further outlook and more conceptual question, is, you know, we have been looking at 2D and found fractional phases for which correspond to the topologically non-trivial band structures of the non-interacting model. Now we know that in three dimensions, there is also a non-interacting topological insulator, the 3D topological insulator, C2 topological insulator. So a natural question would be, is there a fractionalized version of that coming out of a fermionic model? So people have studied field theories and Parton constructions and things of like that. But to really write down a, say, fermionic single particle model that gives us this physics is an open question. Okay, so with this, I thank you for your attention.
You have convincingly shown that there is a connection to Laplace physics. Is there any way to test quasi-particles, like create numerically, to
one-third,
minus one-third,
that is,
separate them?
Okay. So the numerics that I did were assuming translational invariance. But that one doesn't need to do that, and it's also affordable to do computations without a translational invariance. What we can, you know, trivially do is we can put one more electron, which would, in a one-third state, create three quasi-particles. Now, we don't have any control on where they sit in the lattice if we have a translational invariant ground state, but what we can look at is how does the spectrum look?
And
well, exactly. Yeah, that would be one way to go. I never did that. Mm-hmm. But actually, one piece of evidence also for why these are Laughlin-like states is that if we put one more electron in, or actually one less electron, we see a clear gap in the spectrum. But below that gap, we have many, many states. And it turns out that if you count the number of those states, it exactly corresponds to the number of quasi whole excitations in that case that you would expect from a Laughlin state.
Nice.
Per momentum sector. Okay. Yeah. So that there is, in that sense, there is evidence, but we have never, not yet played with the quasi-particles, like trapping them or so. But that, yeah, would be interesting.
At the beginning, you showed the Haldane model, where the narrow band is developing. So what about fractional quantum Hall states in that Haldane model, because there the net flux is zero. So the question is there anything interesting?
So we have also diagonalized the Haldane model, you also get the same result.
I see, like one third and so on.
Yes, yes. I mean, I've only shown you the model with the, I've only introduced this other model to you because I wanted to go to Chern number equal to 2, which is not possible with the Haldane model. But we have started this study with C equal to 1 models like the Haldane model. Or there is also a model with pi flux, which is called pi flux model on the checkerboard lattice. But yes, you're right. In the Haldane model, you would also get exactly
even
that.
Even though the net field is zero.
Yes. Well, I mean, the meaning of that field in a lattice model is anyway a bit ambiguous because you can always put in any Wilson loop, you can put a flux of 2 pi, and it wouldn't be recognized by the electron. So there is no, I mean, this statement of no net flux is a bit vacuous, actually, in that regard. But yeah.
You mentioned about the fractional Chern flagger out of the fractional quartering flaggers. Do you expect the transition to be continuous? Maybe it's hard to tell from the numerics, but your presentation looks like
yes,
continuous.
Yeah.
Is it continuous?
Well, I mean, it's the second order. I mean, you're breaking spontaneously the time versus energy.
Yeah.
It's a continuous. Yes, I think so. It should,
Is it that the initial results? Like, how much should it depend on the commensuration of the good size to the good thing? Because, for example, like your 2/5 like you're using like 5 by 4, 5 by 5, 5 by 6, right? Does it change at all the results you get depending?
Yes.
Did you try incommensurate lattices?
No, I think we cannot put incommensurate lattices because then we cannot land on the 1/5 ground state, right? I mean, we can only create commensurate filling for commensurate lattice. It's unlike in the fractional quantum Hall effect where you can change continuously the filling fraction, basically. Here we are bound to the lattice size. But yes, what you are asking is okay. The ground state degeneracy changes with the aspect ratio. So in general, aspect ratio 1 is better. But closer to aspect ratio 1 is better. But exactly 1 is also not good because then all the ground states fall in the same center of mass momentum sector, and then they have much more matrix elements between them. So you see much more the finite size effects. But like, yeah, But if you are like close to one, like 5 by 6, they are in 3 different center of mass minor sectors, so they're much better degeneracies. Yeah.
So has anyone played with the disorder? Because I guess you can look at...
There is one study, yes, that's a dark hole for N. What they did is they changed, I think, the flux on one link in the whole lattice. And they saw that the grounds, well, it was very robust. They didn't actually kill the state with this.
But
that's not really...
translational invariance.
No.
Along one direction.
No. It's really, as I understand them...
That's Dharma paper.
No, it's Dresden. Maria Darkhofer and maybe Jérôme van den Brink is on the paper. So they just used one link in the whole lattice and changed it. I don't know why they used this specific form of disorder. So I think there is no exhaustive study on that. It's just the only result that I know. But this choice is very robust.
I have a short question. From a theory point of view, do people look for something beyond Laughlin in this lattice models?
Yes.
There is some correlated state, which has nothing to do with what we know from Laughlin hierarchy. So, because you have a lattice, so there could be a new...
I thought you were asking... Okay, beyond Laughlin would be beyond non-abelian states, or
exactly non-abelian, yeah.
So, it turns yes, there is new non-abelian states which
correct. Just you know, unique to this lattice problem rather than continuum problem.
The problem is so these new states are appearing at higher Chern numbers, Chern number 2 or 3, and this you cannot have in the continuum because, I mean, the Landau level has a Chern number 1 and that's it. Yeah. So in that sense, yes, we are going beyond the, we are going beyond the Landau level physics there. Yeah.
Even in the Chern number is 1, you don't have Galilean symmetry, right? You don't have because you have lattices, so you can have a chromal state different from a Laughlin state.
What state?
You can have a fractional conductivity.
Oh yeah, and you're saying you have. Are you talking about like charge density wave states or something like this?
I guess I'm just saying
that
there's no need for the
spinning
fraction to
mesh. Oh yeah, no,
even
sure.
For the
one, in the case.
No,
it's
yeah.
It's not connected to the continuum. Wave functions in the case.
There, I wouldn't. I don't know, maybe there is still a connection, I'm not sure, because probably you're right. Yeah. But of course, also in the fractional quantum Hall effect, people have, it's with Kiepersen, and people have looked at the charge density states, where the fitting fraction is not equal to the Hall conductivity.
More questions?
Okay. Let's thank you.